Please be seated.
We are nearly there on the minute, you see. Day by day we think, oh, we should ask that question. No, we shouldn't. No, we should put that in for further consideration. No, we shouldn't. So it's a bit like that. But we are all but there, and everybody will get it today. That's the minute about further conferencing in relation to PC7 schedule. Things to look at in terms of the controlled activity rule and RDA rule, and one other matter where we've noted, do you need to consider the objective a little bit further? So we've noted that as well. And so there'll be some folk who are going to, some planners who are already going to be there for the schedule, but we're going to have to also note other planners might need to come in because they're not interested in the schedule, so we're trying to organise that and at the same time think about priorities, which we are giving a lot of thought to, and we might, and we'll need some time for as well. It may not be part of this, it might be part of something else. Yep. In some other event. Yep. Lots of balls. Okay, so we're going to hear from Dr. Davern. We've asked for him to be recorded, just for a couple of clarifying questions, and won't take too much time.
So you're right, I think he just needs to be re-sworn.
He does.
Yes. Mm.
Something open?
No. Hopefully.
Do you swear by Almighty God that the evidence you're about to give to this court shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
All right, so hand over to you.
I think we had a little chat after we finished, and what we wanted to come back on was a couple of things. For the irrigation on this development, where is the water metered and how is it done?
Okay, so the water is metered, for irrigation, the water is metered as it is pumped out of the ponds to the vines.
Okay, so there's how many metres are there? So is there more than one metre?
Good question.
Okay.
I think there are, at the top pond, I think there's 2 water metres.
Okay.
I stand to be corrected on this without opening up my file.
That's okay.
Having a look at it. But they're electromagnetic metres, have been since 2009. So they're a very good record, good reliable record. So they're water metered at that point. And there's a water meter on the bottom pond that measures the water that's moved from the bottom pond to the top pond.
That's for irrigation?
Indirectly.
Yeah.
Because it's just a record of what they've taken out of the bottom pond to send up to the top pond.
So is the frost water, fighting water, separately metered?
No.
So it's a combination of the two that's metered for this?
Yeah, so the water that is metered is the water that goes strictly for irrigation. The frost fighting water, you'll see when you do the site visit, that they are big cat diesel pumps, and I guess their decision, I wasn't part of the decision, but when you look at it, you'll look at it and look at the size of the pipes and go, the cost of the meters to go onto those is pretty horrific, because they're big pipes. And as I said to Philip Moore, these are constant discharge pumps. So when you turn them on, you know that they're pumping X litres a second.
So is the frost-fighting water not metered at all?
It's not metered at all.
So that doesn't fit within the overall water take for this development?
Other than we know the water that is getting transferred out of the bottom pond to the top pond, which in the frostfighting season will be going to frostfighting, if that makes sense. So when you'll see when you get there, when the frostfighting is turned on, the electric pump at the bottom pond is metered, So we know that that water is going to the top pond, and we know the top pond has got, you don't have to check my evidence, I can't, if it's got 60,000 cubic metres in it, then it pumps out 60,000 cubic metres plus what is transferred from the bottom pond to the top pond. Because that's where the, sorry, from the, yeah, there's a little bit of water goes out of the top pond for frostfighting, and everything else comes out of the bottom pond for frostfighting.
Now, you told us that the frostfighting water is sort of an order of a magnitude or many times.
Many orders of magnitude.
So
170 litres a second or thereabouts for irrigation and 3,000 litres a second for frostfighting.
So when you go back to maximums, you know, in terms of the schedule, is the maximum for rate of take dominated by frostfighting?
Their rate of take... No, because the rate of take is constant through the gate. So their offtake is always coming through the gate, and that's a constant flow rate through the gate into the whole, into the first pond, and then that water's transferred to the other two ponds. So that rate of, their rate of take is three heads, and it's set by the gate.
So what about, you know, when you've had a frost? A lot of water taken for frostfighting. What about the daily volume then? Is that dominated by the frostfighting? The maximum daily volume?
Yeah, you can pick up the maximum. It probably doesn't have all of the daily volume for frostfighting, but it has a fair proportion of it because you're transferring the water from pond to pond. And that's metered.
So for the purpose of this system... but to get a system which has frostfighting with large volumes and also has irrigation with considerably smaller volumes, how does the schedule talk to that particular system in terms of calculating historical use?
Because when we go back through the record, for the most part, we capture the frostfighting in the daily and the monthly volume.
I see, yeah. Okay.
And will that be always the maximum? Because it's a lot more than a... daily take, say,
When you go back and look through the record, almost all of them, the maximum dailies occur usually in early October.
Yes.
Frostfighting day, frostfighting night, and if you have a bad October, September, October, or a bad October, then your maximum monthly take is in that month.
So does that mean for the rest of the time there's a whole lot of surplus water available for irrigation?
Because they've got storage, they're balancing this out. So when I talk to you will talk to Murray Petrie, but when you talk to Murray Petrie, there are times during the irrigation season when they don't take any water. Mm. So they're not even using their take, because you're pumping out of the top pond for irrigation, you're simply topping up from the other ponds when you're actually irrigating. That makes sense?
Still a little confused because I would have thought that the maximum daily was, you know, happened during the frostfight.
The maximum daily does occur during the frostfighting season, and the maximum monthly occurs during the frostfighting season.
Then does that... so that's not available then for the rest of the year or for irrigation? Because that's the maximum?
You're missing something. We might be missing something. The rate of take itself, that rate of take is geared to irrigation... Yes, no, rate of take. Historical rate of take.
The historical rate of take, I've assumed, is the same day in, day out.
Yep, which is
what? Comes
through
that gate. 77 litres a second.
77 litres per second, yep.
In fact, it sort of averages out at about 51 because they get it, whatever it is, X days out of X days.
And that rate of take, is that through the gate? Is that a back calculation of the gate?
The gate is set... Mm-hmm. To allow only that amount of water into the intake pond.
Something which is equivalent to 77 yes. litres per second.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And that is check gauged by the raceman.
Yeah. And so that 77 litres per second in this instance doesn't have much of a mathematical relationship with the daily and monthly volumes because they're being set by frost fighting measures.
And the buffer that they have in storage.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even bear any resemblance to the take for irrigation.
Yeah, yeah, which you said was 170 litres per second.
Yeah,
but because you're sitting in storage, that's, yeah, okay, no, understood.
It's because of the storage is the sort of the balancing.
Yeah, the storage is the buffer. I mean, they know that that take is, or that allocation will be at some stage unreliable.
Mm.
And so storages have been built primarily so that they've got water for frost fighting, because there's no way you can get 3,000 litres a second out of the race.
Mm.
So they have built storages big enough to fight an X hour frost and then have the opportunity to refill it again with that continuous take the next day.
So for your particular client in viticulture, but maybe also horticulture, actually having consent conditions pertaining to rates of take monthly, daily and monthly volumes are really important in terms of pinning the actual usage, correct?
Absolutely.
Some people, I've heard evidence that, oh no, just ignore the monthly or daily or even annual, I've forgotten which way it goes, but just some of the volumetric controls, maybe all you need is an annual.
Yeah, look, purely from a, you know, if you weren't frost fighting, see no value in a daily or a monthly take.
And why is that?
They don't serve any purpose.
Yeah.
What do they serve? I mean,
I don't know. Has it been explained to you?
The litres per second, if you multiply it up by 86.4, should give you your daily take.
Ah, okay. All right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you irrigate for 24 hours a day, which usually doesn't happen, then you're going to get a daily take. What does a monthly take?
Mm.
What does a monthly volume actually serve when you've got, if all you're doing is irrigating?
All right. So it's important for some industries like viticulture and horticulture, but for pastoral industries, not important.
Don't really serve any purpose, really.
Okay.
Because everything else is driven then by your the take you need to run your irrigation system.
And storage doesn't come into it at all for pastoral activity?
Oh, yes, it does.
It does, yeah.
Because there will be times somewhere along the way that you may not get all of that water.
Yes, but that's not impacting in terms of any volume which is required to be available for daily or monthly.
No.
So that's still only rate of take and annual volume.
Yeah. Look, I haven't dealt with any of the any sort of pastoral operations, but they may have purchased a property with allocations that aren't large enough in terms of litres per second to run their irrigation infrastructure, in which case you will supplement that by buffer that by putting in storage so that you can, you might have a 200 litre a second take and you need 250, so your other 50 litres a second will come out of your storage.
Understood. All right. You okay? That's good. Okay. Anything arising from the court's questions? No? All right. Well, thank you very much and sorry to delay you, but that's been really helpful.
That's right.
Yes. Thanks. Okay. Just actually before we get to you, Mr. Van Mulo, I just had a technical question for Mr. Reid. So two things. Firstly, I'm guessing, though I haven't checked, the website possibly has Dr. Davron supplementary evidence. Should we take it off the website?
Yes, I think
okay,
so.
Okay, good. And whilst it remains part of the court...
I don't think it is up there, by the way.
It is up there?
I don't think it is.
So we'll just double-check, make sure the SUP's not up there. And and whilst it remains part of the court record because it's been filed, we're not asked to have a look at that, and so we won't read that supplementary evidence. Then the second thing is, because we're minded to press into this through the expert conferencing route, as we just discussed, but we also discussed tightening up on the wording of the drafting of the policy, and we talked about that this morning, and I suggested a change, but, you know, there may yet need to be some more finesse. If this has merit, there may need to be some more finessing of the policy and the rule by the planners and their thinking around... around the level of development which is captured. But to the extent that you that we, it would be helpful for us to refer it to expert conferencing, you having filed a memorandum today with that finessing on the policy at least done, so I can say, look, have a look at this.
Yes.
And then see what they think.
So yeah. I've given that some thought.
Yeah.
And so what I would propose to do is, yes, file a memorandum with a redrafted, tweaked policy and rule.
Yeah.
And the two things I would do in relation to that would be to adjust the policy as we had discussed, but also seek to deal with the question of the absence of frostbiting horizontal infrastructure. So just to make clear that what was required in terms of the rule was the prior existence of irrigation.
Mainline.
Of all irrigation infrastructure.
Yeah, it's not all irrigation infrastructure. It's actually your main line. That's what needs to be in, because you don't want to capture the laterals.
Well, no.
That's not all, and the storage dams, et cetera. So
no. This
is where you're sitting, is with the irrigation mainline. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So I will I propose to just make those few tweaks to it, and then I can file it as a memorandum.
Could you get it done today? Because I have a fabled minute that's meant to be going out. And I thought, well, I'll just attach your memo to my minute, and then we can just send it out.
I'll get it done today, yes.
Okay, very good. All right. With that said,
thank you.
Well, Mr. Van Mulo, we're in your hands.
Five copies, okay. May I please the court? At the outset, I will signal for the court that Aotearoa New Zealand Fine Wine Estates Limited Partnership, which I will abbreviate as AONS through these submissions, largely supports the 8 April version of Plan Change 7 that emerged from the planners' caucus. That's a significant shift from the position set out in the original submission, but one that reflects a significant evolution of the plan change through the hearing process to date. So starting at paragraph 1, AON submitted on Plan Change 7 water for Otago when originally notified by the Regional Council, and it further submitted when Plan Change 7 was called in and re-notified it by the EPA. AON operates Manata Estate, a 27-hectare property containing a vineyard producing award-winning Pinot Noir vine near Cromwell. Manata Estate operates under organic principles, although in some respects it is a highly specialised, possibly unique vineyard operation. In other respects it is typical of hundreds, possibly thousands of agricultural, horticultural and viticultural enterprises in Otago, in that it relies entirely on water. Without reliable access to adequate water, Manata Estate could not exist. Manata Estate holds deemed permits for take and use of water from the Low Burn. They expire on the 1st of October of this year. Application has been lodged for replacement resource consent under Plan Change 7 as notified. Manata Estate may not be a large-scale operation relative to some other viticulture properties. Its focus is on producing a premium product. It takes a long-term view of its relationship with and impact on the environment, and such an approach is inherent in the organic philosophy that it applies to its land management and grape production. Organic viticulture relies on sustaining and enhancing the long-term health and viability of the land and environment. And from this viewpoint, longer-term water consents are highly desirable because they provide the ability of the consent holder to plan and invest in longer-term efficiency and other environmental enhancement measures. Conversely, shorter-term consents carry with them a risk of short-term thinking and not providing incentives to water users to implement best practice measures over the medium or longer term to achieve better efficiency and other environmental positive outcomes. In keeping with its long-term perspective, Manata Estate has invested significantly in infrastructure to increase and enhance the efficiency of the use of water on the property. This investment includes recent construction of a 19 million litre dam, and by recent the dam was first filled in October 2019. And also installation of pumping equipment for surface irrigation and frost fighting purposes. That investment is ongoing, with subsurface irrigation of vines to be installed in coming years. This infrastructure is focused directly at maximising the efficiency of water use on the vineyard. The storage dam, for example, enables water to be taken at times of high flow, thereby reducing the demand for water during low flow periods. Such investment can only occur if a longer-term view of land and water use and a property's relationship to its catchment is taken. It is for these reasons that Aon's original submission opposed Plan Change 7 as notified, and specifically sought that it be declined, or if not declined, that limitations to a six-year term be removed, that a longer-term consenting pathway be enabled as a discretionary activity. Aon's has taken a focused approach to the Plan Change 7 process. Early on, it anticipated that a wide range of parties representing the primary sector, central and local government, iwi councils, business and conservation interests would call expert evidence. It also anticipated that during the course of the hearing process, the drafting of the notified plan change would develop and evolve from that originally notified. Aon's has followed much of this evidence in the related drafting iterations. The revised wording of the proposed plan change, and in particular the amendments accompanying Mr. Pelsemaker's supplementary evidence of 14 March, which I refer to as the 14 March PC7 version, and more recently the amendments set out in the attachment 1 to the joint witness statement arising out of the planners' conference of 7 and 8 April, which is the 8 April plan change 7 version, have been carefully considered. The relief which Aon's seeks through its submission has likewise evolved significantly, and Aon's position may now be summarised as follows. The refocusing of Plan Change 7 to more clearly be a process plan change is acknowledged and supported. In particular, the 14 March version and the 8 April version have a clearer focus on providing a procedural rollover of existing deemed permits. Aon's accepts and supports the intent of this approach on the basis that the Regional Council will provide a planned structure that provides for longer-term water consents, give effect to the NPSM, the FM 2020, when the regional plan is updated in 2025. To give effect to this revised approach, Aon's considers that it is essential that the controlled activity pathway provide an efficient, timely and cost-effective pathway to a replacement resource consent for deemed water permit holders. It's also essential that applicants have a high degree of certainty that taking the controlled activity pathway will result in the grant of a replacement consent that reflects the rights to water which have been exercised under deemed permits, and thereby enable deemed permit holders to carry on operating through the interim period as they have been authorised to do under their deemed permits. Subject to some drafting matters that are discussed further in these submissions, these elements are considered to appropriately be reflected in the draft wording considered by the planners included in the 8 April version. And I will note, I'll come back to the issue of current infrastructure and the water meter data record, which was discussed with Dr. Devoran prior to lunch. It follows that in light of the substantive evolution of the proposed plan change from that notified through the 14 March version and the more recently the 8 April version, Aon's has revised its position such that it is now supportive of the revised form of Plan Change 7 as set out in that 8 April version, subject to the matters discussed further below. It's understood that the 8 April version remains draft and that further conferencing is to be scheduled on the schedule. Aon's will remain interested in the outcome of that future conferencing and in particular may wish to submit on any further proposed amendments.
How are you going to do that?
Well, I was...
You haven't got, you know, that, I mean, you're exposed in the sense that you haven't got planning evidence. But so was Mr. Reed exposed.
Yes.
So we threw him a lifeline. So how do you think you're going to come back into this?
Well, what I was going to respectfully propose to the court is mm-hmm. that if there's substantive developments into the plan change as proposed through caucusing, that parties have a limited opportunity to submit on that.
No. Well, I think there we have some problems because we've got, as you will have seen from the transcript, a large number of amendments being proposed, which in the ordinary course, the court would say, thank you, consider, release a decision, and if those, because there's all sorts of changes, if those changes have merit, perhaps then direct further expert conferencing or further evidence. But if they don't have merit, close it out. It's the difficulty that you're in, and it's the difficulty that other parties are in, is where relief hasn't been proposed, you know, which can be tested through a planner. Or there's second thought litigation, or there's the relief is exposed or found wanting in some respects through cross-examination or the court's questions. Then do you just give another party another go at it? And so we're in this endless cycling. So
I appreciate, you know, it cannot be an endless cycle, and if there were any opportunity to submit, it would clearly be very confined and limited.
Yeah, that's the difficulty. How do we do that? You've got no planner. I can't test what's coming next. What I can do is throw you a lifeline, like we did with the last party,
and say, do
you want to think about it? But it's not an endless cycling through of options. No. The court's got to now make a decision about something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would say, though, Your Honour, that what has emerged through both the council's evidence and now is emerging through the planners' conference is a substantial shift from what was notified.
Mm.
And so parties could only submit on what was notified, and now obviously we come to the hearing and obviously have to respond to the most recent draft of the document.
What's the process step that I haven't taken, which you say is demanded in terms of fairness? Because you haven't attended the whole hearing.
No.
You've only been here for very few parts of it.
Yes.
And so there was an opportunity to test all sorts of planners from all sorts of different industries.
There's no issue as to fairness in terms of what has come to date. My concern is what may evolve from where we are now, and whether there's an opportunity for parties to comment on it. And perhaps an analogy is the issue of the potential notification of the regional policy statement.
No, well, we know that's coming, and if it's notified, evidently I'm to look at it. We're to look at it either on the papers or through a hearing, so they're there. But that's its own confined topic, and it's not, you know, necessarily broadening that out. So is what you're saying is that you want an opportunity to have a written reply? Oral reply, actually, not in writing and to the court. That's what you want?
I was anticipating the opportunity in writing to focus specifically on issues that may arise in any caucus version of the plan change that arises out of caucusing. So focus only on changes that emerge from caucusing post parties having had an opportunity to present at the hearing. And appreciate that if such was...
I want to know. Yeah, I mean, this hearing process is difficult insofar as it's not your regular appeal process, and so there's no easy lines of, you know, sequential exchange or simultaneous exchange and replies, and so we've adopted the fairest process that we can see, but, you know, in consultation with parties, and no party has said that there's a different process or preferable process. So the witnesses will conference and they'll come back out of it with a joint witness statement, hopefully, where things will be largely agreed or disagreed, and then depending on what they come out with, there may or may not be a need for also supplementary evidence. But, you know, joint witness statement can stand in the shoes of evidence. So it just depends on, you know, the extent of agreement or disagreement. Your opportunity, if you have an interest in that document, you could cross-examine on it you could cross-examine Mr. De Palsmaker. I mean, you've got a party-to-party interest with the Regional Council. And there I would expect you to be testing what comes out of the joint witness statement, assuming that it's, you know, largely conclusive. So you could test as evidence.
Yes.
If you, for example, didn't like what Mr. De Palsmaker said but liked some other witnesses, you could say, well, I support the outcomes for planners A, B, and C. You could say that in a submission. You wouldn't need to test it. I think it's an unsatisfactory process for the court simply to hear a submission that says, well, I don't like what Mr. De Palsmaker said and I never tested it, or I don't like what Ms. Dicey said or what Mr. Farrell said or whoever the planners are, but I never tested it, but court, I don't like it. That wouldn't be really helpful unless you were raising some sort of legal issue about what it is or where it is that they've got to. So you have to think about, you know, how you're coming back in. So I don't think I'd be assisted by you making simply a submission on the planner's expert opinions. More assisted if you thought them wanting to test that in cross-examination. Or if you really like them, that could come in by way of submission. But to submit and simply say, well, I don't like it, would be almost tantamount to giving evidence, unless it was a legal issue, a fundamental failure in the thinking.
I certainly wasn't anticipating making a submission to say I didn't like something.
Yeah.
If it was a submission, it would be a matter of interpretation and drafting, which can be a matter of legal interpretation, just as it can.
But still, it is better to put that to the witness. Otherwise, you might take the court in places where the witnesses as a group collectively did not want to go or may have had a thought about that. Yeah. Very easily I would have thought on this case, you know, all of these minor changes and tweaks here and there can rapidly lead us down a road which the planners did not have in mind. So I think it's actually important that you put your questions to witnesses, unless it's a fundamental matter of law, which they've missed. But again, even that might be preferable to put that to them, rather than just deal with it in a submission.
Yes. I take your point, Your Honour. At the end of the day, it is difficult for smaller parties to engage in these processes. Mm. And to date, I don't think I might stand corrected, but whether there's been an opportunity for parties to question the planners on the 8 April version, I don't know that there has been.
There has been.
There's
been a lot of questions. And at this stage, because there's more to come, it's really just testing the thinking around some of the changes and the rules in particular. So testing, what was what's there, what was missed. No one's really questioned on the schedule at all that I can recall, mainly because we know that the schedule has not been completed, that it's still under consideration. It's been informally conference between experts. We'll know whether they've completed that tomorrow with further expert conferencing scheduled if they're in disagreement over any matter. So no one's really touched the schedule, but there's certainly been some testing around the wording of the controlled activity rule and the RDA as it has been amended by planners in response to changes in the schedule, where it's a consequential change to those rules. Yeah. Court's been asking questions as well. One of the things that we'll invite parties to do, though, is now complete that the conferencing on controlled activity and the RDA, and not limit it just to the schedule, but to the rule structure itself, and we might need to pull in the objective to be able to complete that process properly.
Mm. Yes, and I do make some observations and submissions on what has emerged from the 8 April in terms of the planning, the latest version, and I address that in the submissions before you. I don't know that I can take it any further than that. Obviously, I don't know what's going to come out of the further caucus. And
none of us do.
No.
none of us do. And one of the things that I've asked Mr. Moore to do, though, is to canvass parties about further directions. Did I? I've forgotten the ambit of that. I've got some. I've got the transcript back, but I haven't checked it from last week. You were going to canvass parties and come back to us on Friday about forward directions. Have you forgotten that?
Ms. Mellott's responsible. Attending to these matters.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking of, yeah. Can you remind me what you're doing?
as far as I recall, Your Honour, it was around the directions for the joint witness statement coming back to the court, whether there's any need for supplementary evidence and how that might be.
And how that's going to be handled. And, of course, you know, still thinking of the directions to come. You know, we haven't talked about rights of reply. I mean, I had originally thought it was just the regional council, but to be fair, you know, now many parties got their witnesses now engaged in processes about which they have no knowledge in terms of the output, so maybe also limited replies there. Needs to be directions on priorities as well.
Mm. Yes, we will endeavour to cover off that suite of matters.
Mm.
Yeah, and at the risk of interrupting my friend, I have been thinking about this issue of fairness to parties in light of the fact that things have moved sometimes after parties have completed their case, but where they have an expert site planner involved in the conferencing, the ability to cross-examine on the output of that conferencing, I think, is an important protection mechanism in terms of the process itself. It's an interesting.
We have, I think, Mr. Cooper's going to confirm this, hopefully, embedded into the schedule, the ability to actually at least call back all witnesses who are involved in that schedule for to give evidence, if that's what they need to do, although there could be perhaps a more streamlined process. But, you know, that ability is there in the schedule now.
Yes, and precisely what that looks like may depend on how close or how far apart the witnesses are. But at its most streamlined sense, there may be an opportunity, and we talked about this, I think it was last week, where one or two representatives might speak to a joint statement if there's full agreement, and they then may be able to be cross-examined on that. If we have two or three camps again, likewise, it may well be that there are
Do something similar.
Yes. And to me, that may strike the balance between efficiency but giving parties an opportunity to test the outcome.
Yeah. And the worst case scenario, which is the scenario we're planning for, is they're all back.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So just confirming that there is that opportunity to test witnesses. It's not being taken away from you. It's actually being planned into the court schedule. And I think rights of reply now, because the case is evolving after you've opened. In saying that, are you pursuing the relief that you filed or not? You know how you filed a separate...
No. Aon's are supportive of what is there in the 8 April version. There is a drafting matter, which I'm going to come to shortly. And so if that were the outcome, that would resolve my client's concerns.
So in other words, here it is, I don't need to have a look at your proposed relief set out in the memorandum dated the 5 February. You're well beyond
things
that.
Things have moved on substantially since then.
All right.
I think I'm up to paragraph 14. In terms of evidence, a statement of evidence has been filed by Mr. Nick Paulin. Mr. Paulin is the estate manager at Manatha. He has 16 years' experience in the viticulture industry in Otago, managing vineyard irrigation and frost fighting in several different subregions. Mr. Paulin's evidence describes the Manatha vineyard in its recent development and future development plans, including photographs and descriptions of recent significant investment in water infrastructure that enables substantially greater efficiencies in water use to be achieved at the vineyard. Mr. Pullen sets out concerns with Plan Change 7 as notified, in particular that it did not recognise more recent irrigation development or water usage records, did not encourage water users to be efficient in their water usage, and it created uncertainty by only providing for short-term permits. A number of those issues have now been resolved through the revised drafting, which has emerged through the hearing process to date. Whilst the focus on short-term water permits remains, in light of the more clearly focused nature of Plan Change 7 as an interim step only towards a planning regime which provides for longer-term permits, this issue is not being pursued further by ALNS. Turning to the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management 2020, Plan Change 7 is intended to establish an interim or transitional consenting regime to bridge the gap between deemed permits which are about to expire and a full assessment of replacement consents under the NPSFM 2020 and a regional plan that gives full effect to that NPSFM. The Regional Council has, through its evidence, highlighted the limitations in information, and particularly water data, which it holds and which is available to inform decision-making on water consents. Furthermore, there are also process steps to be put in place and undertaken before the NPSFM can be implemented. In this context, Plan Change 7 is not capable of fully giving effect to the NPSFM 2020, but nor is it required to. The NPSFM 2020 must be given effect to as soon as reasonably practicable. Accordingly, Plan Change 7 is an important step towards implementing the NPSFM, but it is an interim step only. As noted above, ALNS accepts this interim approach on the basis that the 7 April Plan Change 7 version provides an efficient process for rolling over existing deemed permits into replacement resource consents which reflect past actual usage of water but are of an interim 6-year duration. Until such time as the regional plan has been revised and the essential process steps set out in the NPSFM have been undertaken, Te Mana o Te Wai cannot be fully given effect to through Plan Change 7. It is likely in my submission that longer term water consents will be an important tool to give effect to Te Mana o Te Wai in this region. The development of long term visions for fresh water are an essential component of the implementation of the NPSFM. And ALNS considers such a long-term vision as essential for sustainable management of water resources, that consent duration should be integrated into the relevant timeframe considerations. But it's accepted this cannot occur in the current context of Plan Change 7. The balance of these submissions consider and comment on drafting matters, and all references are to the 8 April Plan Change 7 version. I first wish to comment on Rules 10A3.1.1 and 10A3.1A, matters over which control or discretion is reserved. Now, Item A of Rules 10A3.1.1 and 10A3.1A was amended in the 8 April version, and it reads, as I've set out there, and the amendment was to take out in accordance with and substitute the words within the limits of. And a similar amendment was made to 10A31A. The joint witness statement notes that the reason for this amendment was to make a consequential change to a matter of control A to remove in accordance with and replace it with within the limits of to be consistent with a change to the matter of discretion A in the restricted discretionary activity rule, as referred to in paragraph 11. Now, paragraph 11 said an amendment had been included in attachment 1 to make matter of discretion A clearly limited to historical use and introduce the ability to consider a range of methods and data. All witnesses agreed to that change, so... Now, in my submission, rather than providing clarity, this proposed drafting change has the potential to introduce unintended ambiguity and uncertainty. It suggests that the Council's ability to control the volume and rate of water taken, dammed, etc., is restricted or limited to volume or rates that are within the limits of historical use and existing permit conditions. In other words, even if an applicant is proposing to remain within the limits of their historical usage and existing permit conditions, the ability to set alternative conditions within those limits controlling the volume or rate of take is reserved.
So, what does that mean?
So, what that means is the this is a matter of control, so it's something over which the council has reserved its control.
Yeah.
And we start out with the words within the limits of historical use and existing water permit conditions. So the control is reserved to being within the limits of historical use and existing water permit conditions.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
And so, and you've got a problem with that? Your client's got a problem with that?
The concern I'm raising is potential ambiguity. I would have thought that the matter of control is to ensure that any rates of take which are outside the limits of historical use are addressed. So once the control is, once the proposed use is consistent with the historical usage, then it's a controlled activity. My understanding, based on the evidence which was filed, was that this was intended to be a rollover of actual usage. And if that is the intent, then I'm just concerned that that wording may have introduced more ambiguity than what was intended.
So let's just have a look at that. So you've got entry conditions for that controlled activity. Addressed in subparagraph A and B. So it's a permit currently authorised under, activity authorised under a deemed permit and a taken use of surface water. And that is a controlled activity provided certain conditions are met. Including Roman numerals 4. Rate of take shall be no more than the rate of take recorded in the water years. And Roman numeral 6, volume of water shall be no more than the daily volume or monthly volume or annual volume in the water years. And so council comes to reserve control. And I think the issue you're raising is with the whether the council's got the right matter of control. So you've already got a qualifying, an activity which is qualified because it's in the satisfy the entry conditions. So why do you need this matter of control unless the matter of control is actually because somebody is trying to take a bit more than historical use? Is that your argument?
Yes, and that's clearly something that needs to be controlled. If the actual amounts that are proposed don't reflect the historical usage, then that must be a matter of control.
Is that a matter of control in as much as the answer could be yes, or is that a matter of control as in, look, if you are found to be outside of the historical use, then you've got to bring yourself inside the historical use.
I think that's right.
But aren't we already inside the historical
use? We should be.
Use because of the entry conditions?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think part of the difficulty is around the words the limits of historical use, and I'm not entirely sure what that means. So if someone's historical use, the daily limit is, the daily actual usage is, a number is arrived at, for argument's sake it's 100, then are the limits of historical use anywhere from 0 to 100? Is that the limit? And within that is something that is being exercised control over? I would have thought that the council is reserving its control to ensure that the volumes and rate of take are consistent with the historical usage.
I shall just confer with my friend. Thank you. saying, are you saying if you're through the entry conditions,
yes,
there is no longer a matter of control which the council needs to be exercising, you know, turning its mind to, because you either satisfy the entry conditions or not? If you can't satisfy them, then you have to look somewhere else, maybe an RDA, D, non-complying activity. Then on the other hand, if you can satisfy the entry, this may be how the council's thinking, okay, so you can satisfy the entry conditions, but the matter of control allows us to put a condition on a resource consent that pins you down on the rates of take, etc.
Right,
so that could be, that might be what they're thinking. Is that what you're thinking?
Yes, it is. And whether the wording is making it abundantly clear that that's the purpose of that matter of control, my preliminary view is the wording could be improved to ensure that clarity.
I
put a question to one of the witnesses that perhaps the purpose of it was to enable or to give the council the ability to impose a condition reflecting those rates of take.
And that's how you see a controlled activity and the matters of control. It allows us to control via conditions on a permit, and that is actually making it absolutely clear that this is it.
Avoid the very argument that sometimes occurs from an applicant saying the council has no matter of control within which it may then impose a condition. And that argument has been run before, and it's an argument which ought to be shut down in the drafting if that can so be achieved.
Okay.
That was the intention.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the drafting could leave these question marks.
Insofar as there's a concern that the council is retaining control to reduce back or claw back.
Or even allow more.
Or allow more. Yeah. It's simply there to give the council a platform to impose the conditions reflecting historical use. Yeah.
So with that in mind, is that how you're thinking it should have been used, but actually the wording could be improved?
Yes, that is correct. And my learned friend used the word reflecting twice in the answer. And that is what I would have thought the matter of control was about, ensuring that the volume and rate of take reflects the actual historical use.
And not
an opportunity to claw back within some sort of range that's identified as historic use and thereby impose further restrictions. I don't think that latter interpretation was the intention, the concern I'm simply raising is that I think the wording could be improved and could be tighter to ensure that it reflects that intention.
I mean, I have seen rules that have entry conditions that then allow control or discretion, basically, to what you might consider overriding the entry conditions.
Yeah, so, and you don't want to be overriding either way.
Yes. Clearing up that's not the intention.
Well, in my submission, this is quite a crucial point in terms of this plan change, and it's obviously engendered a lot of thought and a lot of issues, so it's not an area where there's room for ambiguity, and I think the plan change needs to be clear on that.
Okay, so the matter of control A, is not to allow, or is to allow a condition on a permit reflecting historical use. It's not to allow, if you like, ORC to impose a condition which is less than historical use, or indeed more than historical use. So,
that's correct.
Yeah. Or I suppose reserve a discretion as to what historical use is.
There's not a definition.
No.
Has a bearing perhaps on where the schedule lands and the need to ensure that there's very careful alignment in terms of the phrasing used.
Okay. Alrighty. Very good. Now, with that in mind, how does that get picked up for the expert conference, if it's a valid point? Because I know you've been exploring all sorts of points. And I'm saying largely nothing. Well, apart from the things that we've been interested in, I'm saying nothing about that in the minute. So if this is important, and I know you've noted it before in cross-examination, what are we doing here?
We have included it in our questions in our draft minute.
Okay.
So I think yes, I might tweak it slightly, but I think that it is covered all.
But there may be other things that are on your mind.
Chicken and egg as to whether you show us your list first or we show you our list of questions.
We are going to show you our list of questions, and as I said, we'll do that today. But of course there has to be an agenda set for the expert conference, and experts themselves have a fair idea about what was outstanding. But council may also have to cooperate, and you there probably need to be really directive in terms of getting experts to think about, you know, the matters that are an issue that need some consideration.
Yes. So through the agenda.
Yep. If we don't have it, you'll have it through the agenda setting process.
Yes.
Okay.
Provided it's very clear to parties not to, for example, go into some of those spaces the court signalled it will simply make a decision on. Because I foresee some parties saying, oh, okay, we'll put the discretionary activity we're pursuing on the agenda for conferencing. And I'm not persuaded that conferencing will resolve any
I think we've been consistent to the extent, but with only one exception, and that's the exception for the stranded asset case.
Yes.
And that's the only exception that we are making. We will look at that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So if that if that comes through clearly, and as long as other matters that remain at large hanging off of that more limited range of matters, and just thinking about the issue we've just been talking about, that's something that's come back from the planner's interpretation of the conferencing that the technical experts undertook. It may well be that there's
an issue
further
there. Can you flag that? Well, will we flag that one yet?
I didn't quite get what it is.
Right, so the issue we've just been speaking about, that within the limits of historical use, was the planner's interpretation seeking to reflect that which came out of the technical conferencing. And my recollection is there's still some feedback taking place in terms of whether what the planner's interpreted the technical experts to be saying has been reflected in the drafting.
Yes, and we did pick up at least one point this morning.
Two
points.
Yeah, we've got two parties.
But there may be other
who have a different understanding of the RDA than the planner.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I'm somewhat comforted by Mr. De Pelsmaker's presence here, because he has been listening, of course, to all of this. So in terms of some of the other issues that I've been flagging in cross, Mr. De Pelsmaker will have somewhere in his mind that there may need to be some further discussion with the planners about those.
So we have picked up on the existing infrastructure that was in the JWS primary production statement as came out of the cross-examination this morning. So we've definitely reflected that.
And also
in terms of the historical use point.
Yes. Okay, well,
so we're trying to pick them up as we go along, but that isn't to say that the agenda couldn't pick up things that Mr. Pelsmaker, for example, might have noted along the way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so, yeah, it's just our questions, and as we clearly say, there'll be other questions from the technical people's perspective and also for the agenda as well to be set, consultation with council. Only tricky thing is why planners are picking up these signals on the RDA differently, whether it pertains to historical use or not, but there seems to be a communication issue there about which we have no particular view, but there seems to be a communication issue there.
Clear there's a difference of understanding as to what the RDA is doing.
Yeah.
And
well, also perhaps not with all the planners and all the technical people, because we've only had the opportunity to ask questions of some of them. So we're not sure whether everyone's on the same page.
But at least two of them
are not. Yes, in light of the questions I've been putting.
Yes, have highlighted those issues. We had noted them.
There may be others.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, sorry about that.
Sure.
Mr. Van Mueller, you make a good point, and I'm just asking how that point then gets picked up.
Yes.
If it's not being picked up by us because we've already heard it in other cases, then it'll be picked up, if you like, in the agenda-setting process, which Mr. Moore will be in consultation with everybody about. Mm. Eh? That's how you set an agenda. Council, regional council gets everybody's items onto the agenda within the boundaries set by the court. Mm. Mm.
And in essence, that was exactly what I was going to propose, Your Honour, that it be something that the further conferencing could usefully focus some attention on.
Okay. Right.
So that's where that was actually heading
okay,
to.
Good. Yep.
I think that takes us to paragraph 33, and we're looking at controlled activity condition. This is related to the area, land area under irrigation, mm-hmm. And the specified dates. The wording as set out in the 8 April version is supported, specifically the revision and updating of the dates for assessing the maximum area irrigated to 1 September 2017 to 18 March 2020 addresses the concerns earlier raised by IONS in relation to the notified version, as it enables consideration of more recent increases in irrigation area than were able to be considered under the notified plan change. The wording enables changes in irrigated crop type, for example, pasture to vines, provided the overall maximum area irrigated does not increase above that irrigated in the relevant specified period. And such an approach is appropriate and is supported. It is noted that some parties seek the deletion of this subclause, and IONS would not be opposed to its deletion but would oppose its amendment if that were to lead to any further restrictions or reduction of the area that could be irrigated under the controlled activity replacement consent. I turn next to controlled activity condition 10A3114, and this is where the specified dates have been replaced with reference to water years 1 July to 30 June for which water meter data is available. And this amended wording, as set out in the 8 April version, is supported, and specifically the focus on utilising all available annual water meter data is considered appropriate. This resolves a concern raised by IONS in its submission on the notified plan change that the arbitrary dates referenced in the notified version were prejudicial and ignored relevant data.
Now, we will be directing questions on that point, and
yes.
Although there's different views across the panel, my view at the moment is that there's some need for further finessing work on that, so we can, you know, if it is open-ended that we are only dealing with current infrastructure, and you would have heard
yes.
examination of Dr. Davron about that, and that certainly seems to be consistent with the primary sector JWS, paragraph 16. And then at the other end, so that's, you know, not capturing historic water-hungry activities, but just current infrastructure. And then at the other end, the, you know, the no future date, again, well, what's the method to test that there are not unscrupulous practices dealing with ramping? So that there seems to be some thought that needs to go into that. So
yes.
There's a risk. I don't think, I'm not suggesting by any means everybody will get into that, but it certainly has been noted in this region that some people do practice those behaviours.
Yes. Mm. And I think, and listening to the discussion prior to lunch, mm. You had the illustration of MacArthur Ridge where the infrastructure was all installed in one go back in the early 2000s. Minata Estate is an example at the other end of the spectrum where the substantial dam infrastructure was commissioned in 2019. Mm. So there is now, whilst there's quite a number of years of good water meter data in terms of the take under the deemed permits.
Mm.
In terms of under the existing infrastructure, there's only 1 year of frost fighting water records, 2 years of irrigation under the newly installed irrigation infrastructure.
Mm.
So that will potentially have quite an impact, depending on how the numbers come to be analysed.
So there needs to be some thought, I guess, around people who have a short data record, whether whether they can avail themselves easily of the controlled activity, or needs to be some thought around the short record even under the controlled activity, or do they just go into the RDA pot with what sort of information or evidence would need to satisfy the council as to the water demand if the historical record is not long. So, you know, we've talked about what that could look like. That could be maybe Aqualink, but it could be other things as well. And Dr. Davin was making some suggestions about that today. What is the objective evidence? What consists objective evidence?
Yes.
Yeah. And again, so that, you know, whatever result you get from the council is predictable.
Yes.
Under a methodology.
Mm. Yes. And even down to issues like, well, what is existing infrastructure? So if, for example, a vineyard is planting an additional hectare of vines, and that there's going to be irrigation support for those vines, is that new infrastructure? To what extent?
Well, that's the route that MacArthur was dealing with, if it's already got an irrigation infrastructure, the horizontal mainline in the ground, then there may be a pathway through for that, if that's already been committed to. But if you're saying, let's talk about irrigation creep with increasing areas and increasing water, then I expect this plan's probably not, the 8th April version is not talking to that or speaking to that.
No, and indeed the discussion around the horizontal infrastructure was in relation to one of the other controlled activity gateways in terms of irrigated area, so that's under 3, whereas the water meter data is and the potential limitation of that to existing infrastructure is under Romans 4 and 6. So, yes.
What's the point you're making about the additional hectare? Are you talking about... is it the same point that's been made by MacArthur? It's got irrigation in the ground, or you say extend the main line? We want the opportunity to extend the irrigation area by expanding the irrigation infrastructure.
The point I'm making is simply that if we tie the water meter data down to data whilst the existing infrastructure is in place, we need to be clear as to what existing infrastructure needs to be there, because infrastructure, I mean, there's... On a working farm, on a working horticultural, viticultural property, things will change over time. At what point do we lock it in to say, well, this water meter data is relevant and able to be considered, this water meter data is no longer relevant and considered because you installed a different irrigator on that date?
The thing is, I don't know, unless you can put some relief before me. What were you thinking? Yeah, what are you thinking?
I'm just thinking, and I've only just become aware of this issue because it only came to light a couple of hours ago.
But so the MacArthur Avenue is not necessarily relevant to your client, but you're saying, well, actually it needs a bit more thought than just the policy amendment and rules.
In terms of the horizontal pipelines issue, that's not relevant to Aeons at all. That relates to the maximum irrigated area, and there were no issues associated with that for my client. My client looked at, and we've discussed the wording in the joint witness statement of 8 April, and that was and is supported. As set out in the submissions, but this morning understand now that's going back to caucusing, and there may well be further changes to that in terms of the way that water meter data is deemed to be relevant or not.
You mean in matter control number 6?
Control 4 and control 6, yes.
There needs to be some discussion around the currency of the irrigation system. Yes. So you're not taking in water year data from an inefficient system, which has a high level of demand, which in no way actually represents what you're doing on the ground. How that's reflected, I don't know, but it's an issue, and we're going to record it's an issue, and if we don't, then I expect Mr. Moore will, because he's been pursuing it in his cross-examination. And then at the other end, as I said, there's a question around ramping behaviour. So it's if you don't have an end date, then it's testing for ramping behaviour.
And so the point that I'm making on behalf of Aons is that unlike MacArthur Ridge, there are entities out there who have invested recently who will get potentially affected by these changes.
Again, I don't know what you're saying in terms of what relief you want. Or are you just saying where if you change from the 8th April document, then we might move the we could be adversely impacted, you know, if it goes back to conferencing.
I appreciate it's going back to conferencing, and I don't know, I can't comment on what comes out of conferencing.
Yeah, but I'm still not concerned, I'm not sure what your concern is. What is it that you foresee and that's troubling for your client?
So the existing water records
can be very short.
Well, they can be, depending on how this has changed. Currently, they're quite long, and they go back over a five-year period, and they support the activities of irrigation and frost fighting on the vineyard. We only have 1 year of frost fighting record, and it wasn't a cold year. So depending on how the records are then used, that may or may not reflect the water needs going forward. And I don't know if I can take it any further.
No, well, I don't know what relief you want. That's the fundamental issue, is I don't, you know, I think you're saying, are you saying we're happy with Roman numerals 4 and 6 now as they presently stand? But if they change, we may not be happy.
That's
all you're saying, but you don't know, okay.
So the version that what I understood was the most up-to-date version, the 8 April version, we're happy with that, and I've confirmed that. Understand that may well change, and I can't comment on how it might change. I can merely signal that it may well be relevant for my client.
I think I understand. Which, of course, comes back to the importance of having scenarios which are actually representative. You can't have everybody tested, but, you know, scenarios that are actually representative of, real-life irrigation on the ground. Yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe now, may not be later. May not be later. I can't do anything about that, because you may still be happy in the future.
Yes.
Even if it changes.
Yes.
Or you may not. But you do have a question to examine Mr. De Palsmaker, and I suspect other witnesses, depending on where that lands.
Yes. And until we see where it lands, it's a bit difficult to comment further. I'm sorry. I think that takes us to paragraph 38. This rule provides for the restricted discretionary activity pathway, for instances where the rate of volume or take exceeds the rates calculated under Schedule 10A4. This approach is considered appropriate to provide for circumstances where a wider discretion to consider other relevant matters and data to support calculation of historic use is required. Again, the term is limited to a maximum of 6 years. And then the default position is non-complying activity for applications that do not meet the conditions of rules 10A311 and 10A31A1. In particular, any application seeking a longer term than 6 years will be processed as a non-complying activity. in terms of the gateway test in section 104D, the directive policies in plan change 7 regarding term would not be met by such an application. According to any non-complying activity, application would need to demonstrate that its adverse effects on the environment would be no more than minor. And as an interim planning framework, until such time as longer-term consents can be sought under a revised regional plan, AONS accepts this framework as being appropriate. Accordingly, it no longer seeks a discretionary activity pathway for consent applications over 6 years' duration under Plan Change 7. Turning to other matters, priorities. Permits held by AONS include priorities. They have priorities over some other deemed permits, and some other deemed permits have priorities over them. I'm instructed that priority issues have not arisen in practice in relation to these deemed permits, at least not in recent years. And it's noted that the Council considers that priorities are not currently a condition of consent and they are not enforceable by the Council. As such, Council does not propose to include existing priorities as a matter of control or discretion. Rather, it says that to the extent that existing priorities have been exercised in the last 5 years, this will be reflected in the actual use calculated in accordance with Schedule 10A4, so that in practice the status quo will continue. Now, AONS accepts this approach and considers it would be difficult, if not impossible, to draft a rule regime that accurately rolled over existing priority rights in an enforceable manner as conditions of resource consent. However, the Council's proposed approach and Mr. De Pelsmaker's comments noted above do serve to underscore the need to ensure that the actual volume and rate of historical water usage as calculated under Schedule 10A4 is accurately reflected in the rolled over consents issued, and is not subject to further control or discretion by council officers when replacement permits are processed. Now, I've noted in paragraph 45 that it's appreciated further changes to the 8 April version may, perhaps I should have said will be proposed. The planners' conference appears that the planners did run out of time and that further conferencing is to be scheduled. Now, I've noted there are further relevant developments on the horizon, for example, the notification of the RPS, at least potentially, and I have respectfully sought the opportunity to submit to the court further in a limited sense on such matters. We've discussed that, and I appreciate the court's concerns and reservations. In conclusion, Plan Change 7 has evolved significantly since public notification. A number of changes incorporated into the 14 March version and the more recent 8 April version have addressed matters raised in the AONS submission. In light of these changes and the move towards a clearer procedural rollover of deemed permits to resource consents, AONS is supportive of the intent and the general drafting of the 8 April Plan Change version. Fundamental to achieving the intent of the rollover is the notion that actual historic use will be reflected in the rate and volume of water able to be taken under replacement consents. The wording of matters of control 10A311A and 10A311A1A in my submission is potentially ambiguous and should be reviewed to ensure that the rates and volumes of actual historic water use as calculated under the schedule are not able to be reduced through the intended rollover process. But subject to addressing that issue, the wording in the 8 April version would resolve issues in AONS' submission.
That's excellent.
I'm
I feel like saying success.
Well, yeah, I mean, optimistically so, but I'm also very conscious that there is further changes on the horizon, yeah. and that obviously is something that we're very interested in. And whether there's an opportunity to efficiently comment further on that, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, and you'll have to work in with Mr. Moore when he when we talk about the process to come, you know, the agenda setting.
Yes.
The agenda setting for that conference, which is coming up upon us screamingly quick sometime over the next 2 weeks. And so there's the contribution can be via that, contribution can be via cross-examination, and I mean it can be by closing submission, but I do think it is that's difficult, save in relation to legal issues.
Yes.
Yeah, perhaps it's, yeah.
I would certainly accept that last comment that any closing submissions need to be limited to legal issues. I wasn't trying to suggest otherwise.
Yeah, that you'll do some drafting on the way because it's, as I said, it's difficult drafting in legal submissions because then it hasn't been tested by planners. Yet.
Yes. I mean, that said, my submission is that council can comment on drafting issues and if there is. As I've endeavoured to point out a potential area of ambiguity, I think that's legitimate comment for council, but I do accept that we've got the benefit of some very experienced planners in this process and we need to utilise them.
Okay, no, that's good. I understand where you stand. And your client's obviously got a lot to say about deemed permits because we've signalled our interest in that.
Yes.
Just really trying to get some evidence from people who are impacted or potentially impacted by the exercise of priorities.
Yes.
What is the impact? If there's no impact, why is there no impact? So we're just trying to get a sense for scale and significance of any issue arising from their expiry on 1 October.
Yeah. So Mr. Paulin obviously is available to speak to that in terms of his experience.
Mm-hmm.
But the one comment I would make from having discussed it with him is it may be that Monarta Estates example is a relatively simplistic scenario in terms of deemed permit priorities as opposed to some others that are out there.
Yeah, and you know, we are trying hard to try and get the range of experiences.
Yes.
I mean, we've encountered somebody where he's the only deemed permit holder, so therefore he has to, well, I think talk to himself and his mother, he said. So that wasn't going to be, hopefully, too difficult.
Yes.
But that's not everybody's experience, and so we're trying to get a handle on what is the scale and significance of this issue. Therefore, should there be a response here or somewhere else? Yeah.
Yeah, and it does seem to be very fact-specific in terms of particular context,
from
what I can gather.
Okay.
So I'd call Mr. Paul.
Please.
Your full name is Nicholas James Paulin?
Correct.
And you are the estate manager at Monarta Estate Vineyard?
Correct, yes.
You prepared a statement of evidence dated 5 February 2011?
Correct.
Oh,
yes.
Sorry, 2021, sorry.
Yeah.
Do you confirm that, to the best of your knowledge, that the statement of evidence you prepared is true and correct?
Correct, yes, I do.
Do you have a brief summary of the key points raised in your statement of evidence?
Yes, I do.
Could you please provide that brief statement and then answer any questions from my learned friend or from the court?
Thanks, Dean. Sorry, one moment. So, just quickly, I've worked for the company for three and a half years, and that's since the owners purchased the property. In that time, we've converted to certified organic production, fully certified as of 1st of April. The property has produced, previous to our ownership, award-winning wine. It's got the potential now with our increased plantings to produce up to $5 million worth of wine off 10 hectares. So it's a fairly... We're aiming at the top end of the market for what we're doing. We've invested a substantial amount in a new irrigation and frost system that's north of $1 million. We intend to run our irrigation system Subsurface, so burying the drip line underground in the middle of the row. The main benefit of this is there's less weed competition with the vines, it's easier for us to manage, and it's a more efficient use of water. We have less evaporation loss, and we're intending to run an off-grid system where we're running on solar system, and it means we'll be able to irrigate during the middle of the day, which otherwise wouldn't be possible in a surface-based system. We have installed all of this in the 2019-20 season. The dam was commissioned in 2019 in October, and we've had two full seasons of irrigation and one season of frostfighting. One of the, I guess, key points from our earlier submission that has been addressed is that the view of data changing to more recent seasons is much, we appreciate that. One of the other concerns with us is the short-term duration. With wine, we see from other areas of the world that vine age and wine quality peaks at around 20 years. A consent of 6 years wouldn't allow... it would provide a barrier to investment in a property such as ours. And we see that in the region that there was a large planting of vines in the early 2000s, and now we're seeing the fruits of those investments. And there's some award-winning wines that come out of Central Otago from those properties. And that's pretty much it, I think. And, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Okay. What sort of grapes are you growing?
Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Very good. I have some other questions as well. It's getting towards 1 o'clock.
Yeah.
The transition towards the use of the property as a vineyard, reading of your evidence, correct me if my understanding's not quite correct, but when the property was purchased, it was fully under irrigation but for pasture. Was that what was happening?
There's 3.5 hectares of existing vines that was planted in 2000, and then the rest of the property was pasture irrigated.
I guess
one point, just to previous to the vines being there in 2000, it was flood irrigated also.
Yes.
So the Westmoreland race passes through the property, and that's, I guess, 150 years worth of irrigation.
Was that border dike irrigation or this thing of wild flood irrigation?
Not formal border dike and probably not wild flood. There are channels through the property, but not a formal border dike as such.
So when you think about the maximum area of the property irrigated between 2017 and 2020, the entirety of the property was irrigated in that window of time?
Excluding the north side of the creek. So there's about... The low burn runs directly through the property, and there's about 4 hectares on that side that has no access to water.
Right. Whereabouts is the pond? Is that, which side of the river is that on?
South side. Yeah.
So the shift towards a vineyard and the inclusion of using water for frost fighting, that's a more recent change?
Yes. In the design of the property, we chose to use water as the most effective form of frost protection that we could. The katabatic frosts that do occur, water's the only solution.
So those are the where you don't have an inversion layer to push down.
Yeah.
So you're left with water as that option.
Yes.
When you put in the infrastructure for the property, was all of the underground infrastructure laid at the same time? Was it being staged?
Yes. No, we've done... Everything was 2019, except for the existing vineyard. We tapped into that, but all of this new development has been 2019.
Right, so irrigation mains for both irrigation and frost fighting were laid?
Correct.
And though that's underground infrastructure?
Correct, yes.
Two separate pipes?
Correct, yeah.
Just in terms of the sizing?
Mm-hmm. As Tony discussed this morning, our frost system pumps at 125 litres a second and irrigation's 7 litres a second. So it's a 300mm pipe versus a 80.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, I understood from your council that there are water metering records available for the property, but those records would relate to the previous uses on the property?
Correct, yes.
And when you think about those records, is it fair to say that they perhaps don't come close to recognising the volumes of water that you'll require for the new use?
They don't recognise the volumes for frost fighting. I think that's our concern. For irrigation, we're comfortable with the buffer we've got with the dam, but for the frost period, that's the anxious part.
What sort of magnitude or what sort of level of difference in terms of volume does the frost fighting require?
So, 125 litres a second and versus 7, so that's 12 times.
And how many hours a year do you estimate frost fighting might be?
I think in my 16 years, probably the average per season would be about eight or nine events and any, say, 8 hours a night.
Yep.
So, and then there's an average, you know, some years are worse than others.
Yeah. And when you think about the buffer that's created by the storage pond, in a sense, is that pond trickle-fed by the irrigation race? Is that a gravity take?
Correct.
Just off the race?
Yeah.
Prior to the installation of the storage pond, if the water wasn't required for irrigation, then presumably the gate would just be closed and the water would be bywashed back into
the Lowburn. Yeah. We have a system now as well where we can, if there's a flood or we don't need the water, we can shut the gate and put it back into the Lowburn.
And in terms of the takeout from the gate or from the race, is that metered?
Correct. Yes, it is. Yep.
So is that a piped? Is it piped or is it
it's
metered
open
through
channel.
The race?
Right. Open channel meter. Yep. An open channel race for the majority of it.
Thank you. I'll leave you to pursue the deemed permits.
Okay. Any re-examination?
Just one.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You asked my learned friend that water records that you hold would relate to previous activities on the property, and my recollection was you said that they did. Do you have any records that relate to current activities with current infrastructure?
Yes. So we've got records from 2019 since it was installed.
Yeah. Thank you.
As a matter of interest, what road is your vineyard located on?
The major frontage is Swan Road.
Swan Road, up the Lowburn Valley.
Yeah.
Okay. So my question was, do you, in terms of frost fighting, do you take water out of storage for that particular purpose, or are you taking it straight out of the race?
No, it comes from the pond.
Comes from the storage. And is that because the rate of take would exceed that, which you could draw from the race directly?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're currently 23 litres a second.
Yeah.
And we're pumping at 125.
Understood. So you're very much like the previous vineyard, yeah. MacArthur, mm-hmm. and that's why it's important to have both the rate of take and the daily and monthly volumes.
Correct.
There, reflecting yeah. different usage and in combination with storage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Correct.
So I'm very interested in deemed permits and why that's not a problem for you.
I guess my experience is limited to 3 years
mm-hmm.
with this property. So I guess we're privileged that the previous, or not, not privileged, I should, the previous owners, and I can't remember the exact year, they restructured the way the permit was operating. So mm. previously it was one point of take for 6 shareholders, and there was unreliability issues with the race and a neighbour who was very cautious with people entering his property,
mm-hmm.
should I say.
Mm-hmm.
it involved guns, normally. So they decided that they needed to break up the way the permit was utilised, mm-hmm. and so we've now got our own point of take and sole use of a water race. The other permit holders take from different locations. They've shifted downstream, and there's 3 taking from one point. We have the highest priority, so we are upstream of the people that we have priority over. So it has caused us no issues.
Because you're upstream.
Yeah. And the people upstream of us have not caused any issues, so we've never had to deal with it. And I think, I guess, talking to the landowners next door who have been there for 25 years plus, there's never been an issue with the creek running low enough that there's never been an issue with the creek running low enough that they've had to start to divvy up the water. And I think, I guess personally for me, and when it comes to that point, is being neighbourly about it. I think the no dickhead policy, excuse my language if I may, that really for me is part of the process of being neighbourly and dealing with those issues.
Yeah, you mean in terms of any potential reliability issue from the upstream lower priority takes?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess in a small community, I think we're lucky at the moment that we all get along and we all know each other, so I wouldn't see there as being any issues. And I guess the way I see it for us in terms of priority, our peak need is springtime for frost protection, which is not a time that pasture is generally being irrigated as much as it does, say, the end of January when we're back to just irrigating.
So in that sense, your peak springtime for frost fighting doesn't compete with your neighbour's demand for water for irrigation for pasture.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, okay. And the creek that you're taking off, is that the Lowburn or something else? It is the Lowburn.
Yep.
And it's the Lowburn through the Westmoreland race?
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. The race is owned by who?
The race is... that's a tricky one. We've just uncovered... So the race is... We have an easement to use the race through the neighbours' properties.
Oh, yes.
Which is section 417,
I think. Yes, it's another deemed permit, but it's a land use right, I think. Yeah.
Yes.
Section 417. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just going through this reconsenting process has been a learning experience.
So you have an easement, that land use right is to
does what? That this is something I've only just recently encountered. So the easement allows you to run structures over your neighbour's land to a point of take off the race.
Correct.
Where
it goes into a property.
Yeah.
So a right to convey water.
Right to convey water over land, okay.
I think is how it's... And it's like a 6 metre strip, I think, is the... And we have to, I guess, is it a use and maintain right? So we have to maintain it as well.
You have to maintain what, though?
The water race.
The water race, okay. So everyone taking off the water race has an obligation to maintain that water race.
But we're the only users of that section of race, so it's...
Oh, okay.
It's a kilometre of race that we maintain ourselves.
Okay. But if there were three takers at a single point, which I think there is, that you've described that, do they sort of divvy up?
They divvy up the mate. So they take to a gallery beside the creek, and they pump from there. So their maintenance is a lot less than ours to maintain a kilometre of water race.
And who else is on that race?
There's no current users on the section that we...
Yeah.
We take, or that we use.
Some upstream users off the same race?
No.
No, okay.
Off the Lowburn
off
stream. There's a section of Westmoreland on the other side of the northern side of the Lowburn that there's other users, but we have no connection to that.
Insofar as they're downstream from you, or?
They're upstream.
They're upstream from you. And when you say you've got no connection, what does that mean?
We don't use that section of race, so we have no dialogue with them, I guess.
Okay. So in my mind, and I've obviously got the wrong picture, that the Westmoreland race is a continuous race, open race of water, and that might be wrong if you've got, when you say you've got some upstream people on the northern side of the Lowburn,
Yeah, there's
two races branching.
It's described as a continuous race, but our permit we're using allows us to take water 6 metres upstream of the Westmoreland race and divert it into the Westmoreland.
I see.
And carry it in that race to our property.
There's
another section of Westmoreland that goes upstream of us that we have a permit for, but we don't use.
Yeah.
So the permit we're working under, we couldn't physically connect to it.
So there's all sorts of...
There's a lot of...
Different arrangements with races
and
permits. So you've got a permit. The permit allows you to push water into... A deemed permit allowing you to divert water into a race, and you do that to supply yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that, generally speaking, there's been no difficulty with the reliability of flow in the Lowburn to date.
Correct.
The water's there's no minimum flows in the Lowburn, but there's always been water to push into the race.
Anecdotally, what I've heard talking to the neighbours is it's never run dry. There may be evident, you know, someone may have forgot something 30, 40 years ago, but as far as I'm aware.
I think I understand. I had to draw myself a wee picture, but I think I understand. Okay. So in that sense, when the permits expire on the 1st of October, on the assumption that there will always be a reliable flow in the river, your hope and expectation is that you will continue as normal for the next 6 years until this new plan comes into place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But if you were to get a really dry year, then what?
We've got the buffer of the dam.
You've got the storage.
That 19 million litres is probably enough to get us through from Christmas to the end of the season.
Right.
With irrigation.
Yeah.
I can't remember the figures off the top of my head, but I think it. In the last 2 years, we've pumped 30 million litres through our irrigation system, through the water meter, and... So if you split that over 2 years, it's 15. If we start at Christmas time and the dam's full, we should have enough, even if we can't take any water. So that was part of our thinking when we design the layout and we design the system is that if we have this big enough, then we're safe from a dry year.
Yeah.
And we can contribute back to the environment by not taking water.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll contribute to the stream, but
sustaining flows.
Yeah.
Yeah, where you can. Yeah. All right. Your neighbours, have they who are also taking water via deemed permits off the Loughborough, have they future proofed themselves also by building storage onto their farms?
Yes.
They less, say they might be less exposed because they're not frostbiting. But
there's a cherry grower above us who has a dam. The vineyard next door doesn't have a dam. Mm. The guy with horses doesn't have a dam.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. One out of three.
Mm.
But I think, you know, like the guy with horses, it's stock water for him.
Yeah.
It's not an economic outcome for him. Like he's retired and he loves horses and that's what he wants to do.
But the vineyards are different. The other vineyards are different story than potentially.
And a cherry grower as well. He's
So you've got a cherry grower and a vineyard also taking water via deemed permits without storage. Is that what you're saying?
The cherry grower has storage?
Has storage, but the vineyard doesn't.
The vineyard doesn't.
Mm. So there's a risk, if you like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and I guess they're taking water for irrigation, which is under 10 litres a second.
Oh, okay.
If I can remember the figures. Yeah, it's 7 or 8 litres a second, I think, is what the maximum is.
Hmm. Right. Okay.
So, yeah. I think for us, the dam was about frost protection and a buffer for irrigation in summer.
Okay. All right. No, that's really helpful.
Okay.
Yep.
Have you got any questions?
No, thank you.
Have you got any questions?
No, I don't. Thank you.
Does anything arise from the court's questions?
Well, the only matter I was going to say is if the court is interested in taking a view of Monata Estate, it can certainly be arranged. We haven't added it on the schedule because I'm conscious that it's already a pretty heavy schedule in terms of site visits, I suspect. But the invitation is open and I can certainly liaise with Mr Cooper if
not that's entirely sure what's on my schedule. What's been arranged for all of us. Whether or not we've got a opportunity to view something similar where we've got, you know, individual permit holders that are diverting water out of a creek into a race onto their farm. That might be interesting from looking at, you know, those huge irrigation companies which are taking water, you know, like in the previous case out of Falls Dam and then large irrigation distribution or conveyancing network then into other conveyancing companies, if that's the right word, like for Strathclyde, and then distribution onto farms. So that's sort of quite a large proposition. This is a small proposition, so we're sort of trying to get the reach and scale.
Yep.
Yeah, so how might individuals be impacted? Mm.
I mean, I was certainly conscious that MacArthur Ridge is on the schedule and you'll be seeing vineyard operations.
I think Weaver's also on the schedule, but I've... Mr. Reed, is he on the schedule? I thought he was. Somebody said
he was the other day.
Yeah, so, but I'm not sure what he's doing in terms of his races and where he's, you know, I think his permit is from the lake, probably to the farm.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that one, but the invitation is there, so I leave it at that.
Well, think about it, because we are trying to get a sense of the activity.
Yes. Mm. I think... Loughburn is on your itinerary. Fish and Game have proposed that.
Well, if we're up the Loughburn, it's probably a step to Swan Road.
You have to drive past it to get up the Loughburn.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Oh, well, you might want to consider putting that on the agenda if that's okay with you, so we can.
Depending on timing.
Because you're what, cropping? No,
I'm expecting a new arrival in the family shortly.
Oh, no, but that's...
I might be out of
action. You don't want us bothering you. look, if it's not convenient, and I would understand that it may not be, actually. It might be just one hassle your partner does not want. because it's no big deal. Yeah.
I don't know what...
Perhaps we'll confer with Mr. Cooper we'll see where we get to. But unless there's anything further.
No, that's been really helpful. Unless there's anything you want to add. Yep.
No.
Yep, it's been very, very helpful.
Thank you
very much.
No worries.
Okay.
That concludes us.
Thank you very much. 5 minutes to five, and the fabled minute has yet to be released.
Of time for the first time in
the first time
hearing. In a wee while. I think that concludes today's.
Yep. No, that does. So, we are 5 minutes to five and we do have a working draft, and as I said, it just needs to be finessed, make sure we're asking the right questions. It doesn't preclude council asking questions through an agenda. The agenda has to be set. And then, the question we are interested in the question of priorities. We expect individual exposure is different. It's not the same. And we had some thoughts around that. If we put that through to, I can tell you one thought anyway. If we put that through to expert conferencing, our thought was that we would engage our special advisor to attend that conference, Mark Sinclair, and he can brainstorm with the best of them, and be a contributing author to that JWS, and be available to answer any questions that the court, that the court may have of him. So we just really wanted to put in as wide a range of planning options on the table. He's agreed to participate, and that's one thing that we'll be noting in a minute, is that we'll ask the court's advisor to attend on our behalf.
Mm. Yes. The more brains, the better.
More brains, the better. I think that's fair, because not all planners, in fact, possibly few planners, are going to be involved despite the potential reach of the issue.
Quite.
Yeah. And then we also have some thoughts or thinking around the legal submission phase, which I just need to sort out before I tell parties.
Yeah. Very good.
Mm. Okay, so very good. So we're adjourned through to tomorrow, and if you with COES, if we had, I'm just wondering if we had a 10 o'clock start, then you definitely will see those minutes. We shall romp through.
So a 10 o'clock start.
10 o'clock start. Are you able to contact the COES folk, which is Matthew Soule, to say 10 o'clock start, see if that's convenient to him. But the witnesses, Sullivan, Soule and Murray, will need to be present, because I think we're probably going to move through that part of the hearing fairly quickly. I know for myself I don't have any questions in relation to their evidence. It's very clear. Yeah. So I'll leave that for you to talk to those folk.
They had actually said they'd be here at 10 o'clock.
Brilliant. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, judge prefers their thinking. Okay, very good. All right, so we're adjourned tonight. Please all stand.